This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, as we started the week up 0.95% on the All Share at 51,320 is where we closed. Looking at some of the big gainers on the day, the top three up, Coronation up just over 8%, Truworths up over 6%, and Astral Foods just over 6% as well. On the downside, Sibanye Gold, it's been very volatile, have all the gold counters really, down 5.95%, Goldfields down 4.77%. And Naspers down 4%. Things really have been going from bad to worse for Naspers. We've got the redoubtable Rob Tarwell, portfolio manager at Sasfin Wealth, in studio tonight with a view from the markets. Rob, so much to talk about. Are you weaving a theme through any of that?
Well, I mean, we've had very volatile markets, obviously, and last week was a rout across South African markets as well as international markets. I think, you know, there's a lot of buying that came back into the market, into our retailers and our banks today. So you are seeing that, you know, where the P's have derated and come back, there is some buying coming in. And where, you know, companies like Naspers have still got relatively stretched P/E ratios, the selling is still there. You know, that bottom picking and strong buying is not present yet.
What do you think is driving Naspers down at the moment? We've seen the FANGs come off in a big way towards the back end of last week, and you were mentioning off air how Amazon opened steeply in the red. Do you think it's taking its lead from that FANG route?
Yes, definitely. Well, it's the FANGs, and obviously then Tencent, you know, I think it's high, it's about 460 Hong Kong dollars. It's trading at $260, so it's been a very big pullback by Tencent. So obviously that automatically hits Naspers. And then yes, you know, the FANGs have been selling off, and you know, they're getting a little bit of traction, a little bit of a bounce, and then 2 days later they sell off and give it all back again. So again, the buying is just doesn't have the same impetus that it did have a few months ago. And as we saw today, Naspers wasn't down too much initially, but when the US markets opened in Aspen, I mean, and Amazon came down 2%. You saw a very big sell-off in Naspers straight after that. So definitely taking a cue from, you know, that IT and the Internet of Things businesses.
And what was it down, Naspers, around 25% year-to-date before today's fall? So that marks it almost 30% down. 30.
It adds to the list of stocks that are 30% down.
To the ever-growing list. It does look, once again, like an absolute fire sale. If you look through that top 40 list in particular and you see the names at the bottom of that list, you've got to really fight the urge not to go and have a wee nibble at these levels.
Yes, I mean, there is some value coming in. You know, you saw the banks today up a good percentage points. I think the banking index today was up nearly 4%, led by Standard Bank, First Rand as well. Absa came back strongly. So, you know, our banks are trading in single-digit PEs with dividends of 5%. So they're offering, you know, on a value level, very good value. You have to take a look and see, well, can they sustain their revenue with a tough GDP environment? And can they sustain these earnings and transactions? And, you know, if they can, then these are really good levels. So, you know, if you're not in the market and you had new money, you know, the banks would be a place to start to nibble with, you know, P's of, you know, in single digit P's, 8 and 9 P's, rather than, you know, and on a 30 PE type stock like a Dis-Chem at 30.
It's difficult to tell how much the optics of last week have led to any market shift in confidence, Rob. I mean, obviously the number of 290 billion seems like an awfully large one in terms of committed investments. A lot of those projects had been announced before, and you know, on Twitter over the weekend there was a lot said about how we report on these new investments. Some of them were already committed, but there were a raft of new ones out of Anglo American, for example, Naspers to set up this venture fund to support SMEs and tech startups. How much of this did you read as just well choreographed PR, and how much of it real commitment to this new dawn of the president?
It's difficult to tell. So if you take a look at Aspen, Aspen have already started building their facility in the Eastern Cape, which is for anesthetics, and it's going to be a very high end facility. So there they've already started building. So that those funds that they're going to put in is going to be new funds towards a project that was already announced, but it is physically coming into the system. The other numbers are difficult. You know, we want to see money on the ground. You want to see infrastructure start to be spent. You want Anglo's 6 billion to be in a month or two. Not obviously all of the 6 billion, but you want us to start to see the money flow into the economy. Now, are these companies going to wait until elections? Or they're going to just, you know, they're going to put a little bit in and really wait to get clarity, or they're going to go in right now? I think if they really put the money in sooner rather than later, I think that you could be very positive about where the GDP is going, because there'll be commitment behind it. But it's difficult to tell at this very early stage of how much of it is committed and committed for the next maybe 2 months or 3 months.
Yeah, and it is very much a wait and see still with very little detail. I tend to agree with you there, Rob. The statements made by the finance minister last week were encouraging, though. Almost one gets the sense that he can go out and say the hard things, where the president's got to play a far more diplomatic political game. Tito Mboweni came out and said, well, you know, the wage bill is out of control. Our state-owned enterprises, we need to have a long, hard look at those, and SAA in particular. Just back to the US market, and we've seen October's run of losses for US stocks echoing their performance of 10 years ago, and that's at the height of the financial crisis. We've seen the S&P 500 closing lower 15 times this month. That's according to data compiled by Bloomberg. There haven't been that many declines in a full month since October of 2008. Is it time to panic yet about the state of the US market?
I don't think so. I think that we've had a very good bull run. I think that some profit taking is necessary. I think that the markets, you know, you can have quite a big sell off, and you know, you've had a bull market for, you know, more than 5 years. The difference is that, you know, the banks are well capitalized at the moment. The economy in the States is very strong. You know, the unemployment is sitting at 3.9%. It's the strongest, you know, in the last 25 years. So there's lots of other things that are different compared to 2009. You know, the inflation numbers are benign, even though they're trying to get inflation going. Inflation's benign. Oil's, you know, below $80. I think at the heart of the crisis was $100 or $110. So there's lots of different aspects to what's happening in the market. And I think it's too early to panic and say, well, don't be invested. I think that economies around the world are relatively strong. And so I think you must stay invested, and I think that you can look for decent pricing and valuations.
Rob, we'll come back to that, particularly the oil price. Let's cross now to Pusaletso for the latest traffic report.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Welcome back to Classic Business. Rob Tobel of Sasfin in studio with your view from the markets today, Rob. And we were discussing during the ad break what might potentially derail this long-in-the-tooth bull market. And corporate debt and leverage, and it was on the back of our chat about IBM and buying Red Hat out for $34 billion. AB InBev coming out last week saying it's putting it's halving its dividend. It's got over $100 billion in debt that it's got to service. These are the real concerns, isn't it, when it comes to a potential to derail this market?
Yeah, so where is the debt? The debt is in a lot of mergers and acquisitions and leverage buyouts. So if you take Anheuser's deal with SA Breweries, that brought $100 billion of debt. I mean, it's such a huge number. So they've halved their dividend. They're going to pay back with that dividend 4% about every year. It's going to help them pay that debt down. So $4 billion they'll put towards that debt. But, I mean, it still leaves them in $96, $90 billion every year. And at the same time, you're starting to get interest rates to move up. So the Fed's moved their rates up 8 times in the last year and a bit. So depending on how you hedged, your debt's gone up threefold, your debt repayments. So these big businesses like Anheuser-Busch would have hedged. They would probably have hedged about 80%. But where you're going to find problems is what companies haven't hedged. Maybe they've only hedged 20 or 30% of this debt at the very low rates. So I think you could find problems in businesses where they haven't hedged properly. They've, you know, they expected slightly better growth rates, a slightly slower uptick in interest rates, and all of a sudden these debt repayments are going to come back to haunt them, and there's going to be a lot of liquidity squeeze. Banks are going to start saying, where's our cash? And that's where liquidity can come out of the market.
The IBM deal, that said, there was an all-cash offer, wasn't it? $190 a share, I think, in all cash. So this is not one to be overly concerned with, but that is still an eye-wateringly large sum for IBM at $30 billion. So what's the strategic play for it here? Obviously, it wants to get its hands on a hybrid sort of cloud asset. It's where Amazon Web Services play and Microsoft Azure. Does this take IBM, which has still got that reputation in the mainframe space, into that league just yet?
Well, definitely, they're buying themselves into cloud. I think that obviously on the hardware side, they're still right up there with the best of them. But on the software side and obviously with cloud, they just haven't got into that market yet. And they've got a very big business base. So obviously IBM is in a lot of corporate businesses, and that corporate business will use Microsoft or Amazon as their cloud, where they could be using IBM. So they're buying cloud, where they should have probably been in it at the same time Google and Amazon were in it.
Yeah, sometimes it pays not to be the first mover, because if you look at the way Microsoft has responded to the head start given to or it conceded to Amazon Web Services, it's doing quite well. I was chatting to Mteto Anyati. It's one of the fastest growing cloud solutions in the UK market at the moment. So sometimes you don't have to be first mover, but you can't wait too long and be completely left behind by the cloud revolution.
Correct. And I mean, I'm not fair enough with Red Hat to know how good a product they have. If they've made a really good purchase and it really is top class, then maybe they'll get away with it. But generally, when you're trying to play catch up like that and spend too much money, it's a very difficult difficult market for you.
Now, oil prices. I read a very interesting article by Arthur Berman in a reputable oil publication about why oil prices could still go lower. Very difficult to speculate on the oil price. You can have two major multinational CEOs say, well, the one saying it's going to $50, the other saying it's going to $100. But where do you see it in your crystal ball?
You know, I think when we've looked at it, we probably see between $70 and $80. We don't see a $100 oil price. Obviously, geopolitical risk is a big issue, and you know how strict people are with the Iran sanctions. You know, you saw when Saudi had the problem with this assassination, I would say you would call it. Oil came online very, very quickly from Saudi, so they just pumped oil into the market. Oil price came back down again, so you know they've got capacity when they need it, and also you know Iran does seem to get around its sanctions, so you do see Iranian oil coming around and into the market. So Venezuela is definitely a no-go, but maybe Libya can, you know, push some through. Nigeria could probably push through some more. So we don't see $100. So you know, $80 to $70 is probably where it's going to be, and that I think is fair for the world now, barring any geopolitical issues. You know, I think $80 is quite high.
Oil and Gas Week next week in Cape Town is always an interesting one. We'll be following that quite closely to bring you the latest developments in the oil and particularly the gas market as well. Ever since we saw the withdrawal of the MPRDA amendment bill, there are signs that we might start to see some movement in our own gas sector, and that holds great potential. MTN announced its third quarter update today, and it's growing subscribers quite nicely outside South Africa, but it lost 834,000 prepaid customers in South Africa in that June to September quarter alone. So price wars abound, and we know there's a lot of competition in the space at the moment. It's coming up in MTN's numbers.
Yes, it is, but I think in general they were quite solid numbers. So taking away all of the different regulatory issues that MTN have, you know, Nigeria's growing at a very good level. South Africa on the data side grew very well. And out of all of the countries that they're in, only two countries had negative revenue. Everyone else was growing and growing quite well. So all in all, I think it was a very good set of numbers, but you can't take away the regulatory issues that they have in Nigeria, and therefore it makes it a very difficult trade. I think without that, you know, you could probably look to buy them. But they've also got the Iran issue with sanctions in Iran. So, but I think they're performing relatively well in a difficult time. And you know, the South African base is very mature. So you'll have good months of growth when you take away a little bit from Vodacom or Cell C and vice versa. So it'll be a little bit choppy. But in general, they're still adding customers every year. So I think a good set of numbers, but just a little bit uninvestable at the moment.
If you looked at ShopRite, on the other hand, and it is a worry that ever since Whitey Bisson has handed over, there have been a few chinks in the management's arsenal. And I say that with all due respect to Peter Engelbrecht, because I still think they are the A-team in the South African retail space. But you just look at the latest announcement. Product availability challenges stemming from the group's largest DC in Gauteng, distribution center. It's almost half of total centralized food distribution in the local market, experienced major problems. There was industrial action. They couldn't quite stock the stores. They usually have a fantastic distribution. And you know, for a company like ShopRite, this really doesn't shine a very good light on management.
Yes, and I mean, the DC has been their strength for the last few years, so it is a bit of a worry. And they're also spending huge capex into their DCs. They're still adding to their DCs, and they're massive DCs. We saw Pick n Pay actually start to pull back on some of their capex. ShopRite has definitely got a strategy around where they've put a strategy in a couple of years ago, and they're just going for it. And maybe, you know, they can take their foot off the pedal a little bit. They're spending a lot of cash into those DCs. They've had a few problems. And, yes, so there's definitely a look at Peter Engelbrecht, and does he have enough strength, and does the board have enough expertise to guide him in the right way? I think Christo Visser on the board now will probably be very limited compared to how he was before, and that, you know, that is a skill set that's also disappeared. Whitey's disappeared. So, you know, it's a difficult time for them, and you'd need to get a much better result in the next 6 months to stem some fears about management.
Famous Brands is another one. Ever since Kevin Hedewick handed over, and Nando's, they got the last laugh with Gourmet Burger Kitchen offloading that particular asset. They've written that down, and that obviously pushed Famous Brands into the red. Are there any signs of a turnaround there for you?
Their numbers, relative to other food producers, well, not producers, restaurants like Spur, were better. So they, you know, they're better than their peers locally in South Africa. But they're still expensive. They're not generating enough revenue. And, you know, Gourmet Burger, part of it is that they have to reschedule some of these leases. If you take Netcare, for argument's sake, they've taken them 2 years to renegotiate some of these long-term leases. So it doesn't mean that it's just out of the water just yet. So I wouldn't be a buyer of Famous Brands just yet. I think that they need to write this business off, and it's going to take some time to recover from it. I don't think it's just a recovery straight away. Mm. So it's expensive, and I wouldn't bite right now.
Yeah, don't bite in just yet. Rob Tarwell, Portfolio Manager at Sasfin, with your view from the markets.